Well, that's part of attachment, that you have enormous power of the emotional well-being of the other person, whether you want it or not. It goes with the territory. And really, abuse is misuse of that power.
On today's episode, we have an awesome discussion with one of the greatest marriage professionals, scholars, counselors, educators, and authors of our time, Dr. Stephen Stosny. He's the founder of Compassion Power. His current book is Empowered Love, and one of my personal all-time favorite marriage books is his book, How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. He's treated over 6,000 clients for various forms of anger, abuse, and violence. He's appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Today Show, CBS Sunday Morning, many CNN shows, and the top news outlets across the country. He's taught at the University of Maryland and at St. Mary's College of Maryland. His blog on psychologytoday.com has over 20 million views. He currently offers boot camps for chronic resentment, anger, emotional abuse, and monthly workshops on various self-healing and relationship topics. You can find more on his website, compassionpower.com. Now, get ready to take notes because you're about to be blown away by one of the all-time greatest marriage experts in the world. So enjoy the show. Hey friends, welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Dave Schramm, USU professor and family life extension specialist. I'm here alongside wonderful, amazing co-host, Dr. Liz Hale. She's a licensed clinical psychologist. Liz, you and I, we're dedicating our lives and our work and our research really to bringing people the best tips, the best research to help them have the marriage of their dreams. All right, Liz, today I'm personally super excited, super pumped to have our guest on today because I'm going to geek out a little bit. He is one of my favorite authors of all time, and that is he authored a book back in the day, and I read it when I was in graduate school, How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. And so
I read it in grad school too.
Did you? Yeah, I think it's required.
Oh, yes, in grad school and a little after grad school, and after my doctorate. It's a classic.
One of the best. It's one of Dave's faves. Mm-hmm. And so we have one of the authors, Dr. Stephen Stosny, on us here. Dr. Stosny, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hey, before
you're making me feel old reading this book when you're in graduate school. No,
I'm feeling old. It's called a legend. That's what we call it here. Is we call it one of the legends. Hey, before
a young legend.
Yeah, that's right.
And we are really young. We're really young. So that long ago.
That's right. Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation. But before we jump in, because you've written another book called Empowered Love, and we'll talk about the book and the boot camps and the work that you do. But since I brought it up and I leave people hanging, can you give even just a little quick summary about some of the main points, the fear, the shame, stuff that I love? Can we just touch a few points on that book before we go any further, Dr. Stosny?
Well, the major premise is that communication is a function of connection. In other words, when you feel connected, you communicate well. But it doesn't get you connected. If you're disconnected, you're going to communicate poorly, no matter what techniques you work. So we try to encourage clients to connect before they communicate, and it goes much better that way. And the reason for that is that we communicate, certainly in love relationships, but in all relationships, primarily nonverbally. That's facial expressions, body language, tone of voice. And research shows those parts of the brain that control the body language and tone of voice are activated before the Wernicke's area that interprets the meaning of the words. So you've made a judgment about what the person's saying before you actually know what they're saying. And it's based on those nonverbal cues. But that makes sense if you realize that humans communicated by emotional display for millennia before we had language. And animals still communicate that way by emotional display. See, communication isn't about information in a love relationship. It's always an underlying bid for connection or blame for disconnection. And if you feel disconnected, it's going to be blame. That's going to give you that negative body posture and you're going to get a negative reaction. If you approach somebody with anxiety, you're going to invoke a fear of failure or shame in them, and vice versa. And that's what the fear-shame dynamic is.
And then those words, honey, we need to talk, right? Talk about even more anxiety. Yes, Dr. Stosny?
Yeah, because that always follows by how you're failing as a husband.
How disappointed a partner you are. That's right. So we love the word connection. And I really give all kinds of credit to Dr. Dave here for calling this the stronger marriage connection. We added that word connection because we're all about that. And it is really time to talk about that. What does connect us then? You say connection first before communication. What do you suggest we do to connect better before we try to communicate?
Well, connection is a mental state and a choice. In other words, you choose to feel connected and you choose to feel disconnected. And what you want to realize in general, you like yourself better when you choose to feel connected and you like yourself worse when you choose to feel disconnected. Now, to connect, especially if you're a woman talking to a man, touch first. Because most men are oxytocin deprived, and the touch will calm, and it'll calm your anxiety too. Make eye contact, lower your tone. And that's consistent with like John Gottman's research about harsh startup. And that's the way to do it. But the attitude of connection is most important. The attitude of connection doesn't even require interaction. I feel connected to my wife when she's traveling, because then I have to consciously think about her.
That's
when
right.
She's here, it's just I'm not consciously thinking about her until she's in my cone of perception. So the connection is mental, and you want to nurture it mentally. And then when you're with that person, that mental connection will change your emotional demeanor. You'll be approach instead of, now I dare you to love me.
Yeah. That's so uninviting, right?
Yeah. Criticism's not an aphrodisiac.
Criticism, isn't that the biggest turnoff ever, right? All your defenses go up. Yeah, definitely not a time of connection. Can we ask you your take on the underlying cause of relationship dissatisfaction and distress, Dr. Stosny?
Well, I think it's blame, denial, and avoidance. Instead of trying to improve situations, you look for who to blame it on or try to deny any kind of responsibility or try to avoid the problem. I call those the toddler defenses, because two-year-olds blame, deny, and avoid. Two-year-old breaks the lamp, you ask them what happened, they'll blame it on someone.
Yeah.
My daughter was an only child. She used to say, Jimmy, do it. That was her imaginary friend. She's now a lawyer because she figured out the Jimmy defense wasn't very good. If that doesn't work, I don't know. They don't say it, they sing it. And if that doesn't work, they're hiding somewhere, avoidance, blame, denial, and avoidance. And if you continue to do those in your relationship, it's going to have a hard time working.
And that's part of why you and Pat Love talked, I guess, about that personal responsibility, right? Do that self-assessment.
Yeah. And focus on what you want rather than what you don't want. See, the complaints are focusing on what you want. Now, there's a neurological principle that focus amplifies and magnifies. Whatever you focus on becomes more important than what you don't focus on. So focus on what you want.
What you want to happen.
If you focus on how your partner's failing you, you're going to get more failure. If you focus on how to be successful as a partner, you're more likely to get that. Whatever you focus on, you're going to get more of.
Whatever you focus on grows. I love that statement. Well, this leads us into kind of our next discussion then, really what you're doing more currently, if you will. You've treated over 6,000 clients from various forms of anger, abuse, and violence. That's quite a marker in the world. That's an amazing track record. You seem to have found something that resonates and works for individuals and couples.
Yeah, well, it took me quite a while to know that what actually leads to violence is resentment, and that's a perception of unfairness. You're not getting the help, appreciation, consideration, praise, reward, or affection. And then that makes you feel entitled, and the entitlement is going to create a defensive reaction in the other person. That's how it escalates. So what we try to do is replace acting on your feelings, which is going to keep you making the same mistakes over and over again, to acting on your values, being the kind of person, partner, and parent you most want to be. You don't get changed by acting on your feelings because they're always about the past. That's like, I'm going to exercise when I feel better. Well, you're not going to feel better until you exercise. So the acting on your values changes your feelings. But if you just act on what you feel like doing, you're going to violate your values. Now, here's the thing with abusive people or even just highly resentful people. I always ask, and you can do this yourself, think of something you resent about your partner. You don't have to voice it, but just think about it. And then think about how you can look at that same behavior a little more compassionately, understanding the vulnerability of your partner. Now, in which emotional state do you like yourself better?
Yeah, compassion.
You always are going to like yourself better with compassion. That's your central nervous system trying to communicate with you. Yeah. The only way it can is to make you like yourself or dislike yourself.
Yeah.
And you're far more likely to get a positive response. We call it compassionate assertiveness. That's when you stand up for your rights, your privileges, your opinions in a way that respects the rights, privileges, and opinions and vulnerabilities of your partner. So you don't try to make them afraid or anxious. You don't try to make them ashamed.
Hey, we'll be right back after a message from our sponsors. Welcome back to the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast.
Even before we met today, I actually did a little homework assignment, Dave, if you don't mind me sharing.
Yeah, please.
Because I have had a real negative belief about my husband when he gets behind the wheel of the car. My I don't know what you might call it, but my tagline for him is he is a very impatient driver, right? Impatient, risky driver. And I had to really work on that lately when I realized, you know what? Ben, my husband Ben, he has actually a professional driver's license. He's a commercial driver, and he's worked on cars ever since he was a little kid. He's just had this gift for cars. And he and I, we haven't been in a car accident, you know, together in our marriage. I had to really think about, now, wait a minute, where's the evidence to say that he's this impatient driver, even though he likes to make comments about drivers? So I have this new comment now that I say, you know what, honey, you are my safe, secure chauffeur. I'm so lucky. I get my chauffeur today. He loves to take me around. So I see exactly what you're saying. I've had to really work on that, that whatever I focus on grows.
Yeah, but you this will make it easier for you. Say that you're my safe chauffeur.
Yes.
But I get a little nervous when it's not your driving, it's my anxiety. And you see, that gives him, he won't feel like you're criticizing his driving, and it gives him a chance to feel compassion for you. Try it. Yes. Test the hypothesis.
So, see if he, so let me see if I get this straight. So I talk about my own anxiety is what you're saying.
Yeah, but you say that first. You make sure it's not about his driving. You drive well, but I get nervous. It's just problem.
Well, that's what I say. Honey, you drive well. I just am anxious.
Yes.
I'm just an anxious Nelly in the car.
Okay. Yeah.
So taking responsibility. I love that. Thank you for redirecting.
And test it, though. See if he's more compassionate when you do that.
I'm going to return and report to you, Dr. Skosny.
People are never compassionate when you make them defensive.
It's hard to be, isn't it? Yeah. There's no room. There's no room to dig deeper. I get it.
Because you feel like you're being attacked, so the defenses go up.
Yeah.
You know, if you're being attacked by a saber-toothed tiger, you don't want to know about its kittenhood or how many cubs it has at the nest that it has to feed, or if it's on the endangered species list. So compassion is not going to enter into it. Yeah. You just want to fight it.
So I love this topic. Let's keep going with this a little bit, because you've talked a little bit about this resentment and couples get stuck there. And then you've talked about these values, these virtues. I've done some research myself on the virtues of compassion, of humility, and positivity,
when those things are there, we're like, okay, what is it really like to be them, to try to understand their world? What are other virtues or values that are really helpful?
Well, compassion's the lifeblood of intimate relationships. When that goes, they don't survive. They suffocate. And resentment is really the opposite of compassion. The reason it's so important is, for one thing, you don't form emotional bonds without compassion. It's not love that forms the bond, it's compassion. Now, think about that. When you were falling in love with your partner and you had to call your partner, God forbid, with bad news, my mother passed away last night. Mm-hmm. And if your partner responded, well, tough, call me when you get over it, and just want a little laughs here, would you have fallen in love with that person? No, we only form emotional bonds with people whom we believe care how we feel, especially when we feel bad. So failure of compassion when you're living together feels like betrayal. You know, you got me to love you by making me believe that you care. Most of what we fight about is failure of compassion. See, facts or disagreements trigger disconnection, but what you fight about is the feeling that your partner doesn't care how you feel. If you believe your feelings are valued by your partner, whatever that disagreement is, you'll work it out. It's the failure of compassion that causes the conflict. Now, here's the swindle with resentment. When you're resentful because your partner doesn't care how you feel. But when you're resentful, you don't care how your partner feels. So what you're saying is, I don't care how you feel, but you absolutely must care how I feel.
I feel. Oh, that's right.
And that's why it never works. There's no planet that's going to work on.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a principle called emotion reciprocity. Whenever you approach someone in a positive emotion, 70%, this even is even true of animals, 70% of the time you get a positive reaction. The other 30% of the time there's something wrong inside of them. They got a stomach ache, their stocks went down, the team lost. The other law, though, is negative reactivity. If you approach someone negatively with anger, resentment, demand, superiority, virtually 100% of the time, you get a negative reaction. What I tell my people in my boot camps, that you have to compare that to surgery. Because 30% of the time when you're compassionate, you're still going to get a negative response. But the surgeon tells you if you have this procedure, you have 70% chance of recovery. You see, 30% chance I might die? What else can I do? Well, if you don't have it, you will certainly die.
Right.
That's the way it is with positive reciprocity.
Right?
Yeah, the only alternative is 100% failure. So always go for that 70% success. And even when it does fail, you at least have the satisfaction of knowing you did the right thing. Your partner just couldn't respond positively at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the self-doubt.
How do you help couples break free, Dr. Stosny? How do you help them break free of these habits? And do you have a story even to share about a couple who was able to get unstuck from these patterns? What did they do differently?
Well, there are a lot of stories, but I don't like to do that because that implies it worked for these people, so it should work for you. What I try to do is ask anybody listening to any of my advice to make a hypothesis of it and test it in your own experience. So try communicating with your partner when you're resentful, and then try doing it when you're more compassionate, and measure the difference in your own experience, because that's the only thing that's going to produce change. Even some advice that is research supported. Research is about group averages, not individuals. For instance, a valid research statement is men are more aggressive than women. But what that means is if you randomly select 50 men and 50 women, the average incidence of aggressive behaviors in the male group will exceed the female group. Yeah. But there's going to be lots of non-aggressive men and lots of aggressive women in those other groups. So it tells you nothing about individuals. So even when the claims that science, I hate those claims, this has scientific evidence, it doesn't mean it's going to apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Pavlov, yes, go ahead.
Pat, when we do presentations together, she's 5'10" and I'm barely 5'6". And we make the empirically valid statement that men are taller than women. And she pats me on the head.
That's funny.
Because that demonstrates there's going to be tall women in one group and short, attractive men in the other group.
There aren't any two couples alike. Is that true even?
Right. Right. And yeah. And the way we love is different. You got to figure out how to love your partner. Mm-hmm. The most loving thing you can say to your partner is teach me how to love you.
Oh, it's beautiful. That's
powerful. Because therapists know what not to do. yelling's not going to get you where you want to go, but it's going to look a little different for each couple. Yeah. What we've learned about emotions is they're so influenced by physiological states, room temperature, time of day, metabolism, physical resources, that most of them are not even psychological. They're more physiological. Mm-hmm. So trying to give a psychological meaning to every feeling is you're just going to be spinning your wheels. Mm-hmm. It's much better to act on your values, the kind of relationship you want to have and the kind of person you want to be.
Yeah.
So I think I hear pretty clearly, it's when I speak to my husband, it's, oh, honey, you are a good driver. It's just me that's anxious, right? I do so with compassion, not resentment. Right. And how I am more compassionate is in my tone, my pitch, maybe that I'm touching him softly.
Yeah. But you see, we have a concept called core value. That is when you are automatically true to your deeper values. You are automatically trying to improve or appreciate or connect or protect. If you just get to that emotional state, you'll automatically do those things.
Okay.
So that we teach people a self-regulation skill to shift into core value before they connect.
That's so key, right? Before you even open your mouth, that's when you do that self-assessment and get to that core value of compassion. I love it. Thank you for that.
See, the interaction is not going to regulate you. You have to regulate yourself before you interact. You're probably interacting with someone who's also dysregulated. So you're just going to make it worse for each other.
Yeah. You mentioned those four words. Can you expand a little bit? I love those. I just was reading your book on the airplane, actually, the improve, connect, appreciate, protect, right? Those four words.
The ones that evolution selected are protect. That's the most important. That's what we're hardwired to do with attachment. You have an unconscious automatic instinct to protect people you love. And the more helpless they are, the more. In fact, that's the natural purpose of anger. It's not self-protection. It's the protection of loved ones. When will you get the angriest? If I attack you or your children?
That's right.
In fact, humans are the only animals who use anger against loved ones. All the others use it to protect them. That's because we've evolved an ego and transferred the protection of anger from loved ones to the ego. Nobody can hurt your ego like somebody you love. So, but anyway, protect is the one that is selected naturally. But because we've developed such complex social relationships, we have to add improve rather than blame, because you can't improve and blame at the same time. They're incompatible, really. Appreciate, because appreciation not only improves your relationship, it increases self-value. See, if you look at a beautiful sunset, you become a better person at that moment that you're appreciating it. It's not doing much for the sunset, but it's doing a lot for you. And it's the same when you appreciate your partner. So we present it as self-value enhancement, and it just so happens that it's also going to improve your relationship a lot. And the other side of that coin, if you devalue someone you value, it's going to erode self-value. You know, it's always present in resentment is self-contempt. You know, I resent you for interrupting me. And there's always this little voice, why did I fall in love with someone like that rude? You know, how could I have been so stupid? Why did I believe her? Why did I trust him? It's always that self-attack that is underneath the blame of the other person, always self-blame. And that's how it erodes self-value.
I've never thought about that. I'm mad at myself that I even chose you. right?
Yeah.
I'm mad at me that I'm even in this situation. Did I get that right?
Yeah, or that I expected you to be different.
Yes. I remember hearing that in early part of my marriage with Ben. I remember him saying, I saw this in you before I married you. I just have myself to blame. You know, I knew this. I knew this when I was going in. It's like, oh, and then the shame that I felt with that. Wow, that's
yeah. Well, self-blame is just as bad as blame of others because you can't improve. When you're blaming, you're focused on damage. To improve, you have to focus on strengths and resilience.
So you're
in the wrong part of your brain. Blame's coming from the toddler brain. Improve has to come from the adult brain, the prefrontal cortex.
Yep.
So you're in the wrong part of your brain. And blame's about the past. Improvement has to happen now and in the future. So you're in the wrong time dimension. And that's why you can't improve blame.
Got it. You want to stay in the present and out of the toddler brain, right? In the adult brain, present.
The toddler brain's only good for having fun. It's great for having fun if you just want to have fun. But as soon as a problem arises or stress increases, you got to get into the adult brain. And the quickest way to do that is, what can I do to make this a little better? So the toddler brain is just an alarm system. It can't improve anything. Mm-hmm. It's a smoke alarm. It can't put out the fire. Can't even see if there really is a fire.
Yeah, it just scream like a loud smoke detector does. You know, I always marvel how powerful we are as people, right? It's like, for better or for worse, I'm powerful in my marriage, one direction or another. And what's it going to be?
Yeah, well, that's part of attachment, that you have enormous power of the emotional well-being of the other person, whether you want it or not. It goes with the territory. And really, abuse is misuse of that power.
You know, when talking about anger, you say that anger management really isn't all that effective. It doesn't really work that well.
No, it doesn't, because anger management teaches you to manage the feelings of anger and the behavior that you're likely to do when you're angry. But the fuel for anger, the universal activation of anger in all animals is a perception of vulnerability plus threat. If you don't, the invulnerable animals don't feel threatened that much. You know, the elephants aren't that threatened unless they come across a pack of lions, but usually they're not that threatened. But if they're wounded or they're starving or they're sick, then they're perceiving more threat, because the more vulnerable you are, the more threat you perceive. So the vulnerable emotions are what the fuel of anger, and that's guilt, shame, sadness, physical disability or illness, plus blame equals anger. So just managing the feelings and behavior of anger is like fanning around a flame. To put the fire out, you got to turn off the gas.
Yeah.
And the gas is the vulnerable feelings.
Yeah. People divorce over anger, don't they? They'll say, this person needs anger management. I mean, he's never going to change. We do a lot of accusations.
They really divorce over blame, denial, and avoidance, and that's what produces the anger.
That's the bottom line. Yeah.
Failure
of compassion. Resentment, it just grows, doesn't it? You say something else is more effective than anger management programs in general.
Well, that's my program, core value.
I want to hear about your program.
Acting on values rather than feelings. You see, what anger management tells you to do is tantamount to taste the food, but don't swallow. Validate the anger, but don't act on it. Emotions have a very powerful motivation, and all emotions have three classes of motivation: approach, interest, affection, compassion. If it's somebody you love, I want more of you. Avoid, I want less of you, or attack. I'm seeing you as a threat and I want to devalue you. So when you're angry, you're in that attack mode, and it's very hard to suppress it. But that's what anger management wants you to do. You've got to change the vulnerable emotions triggering it. And the way to do that is, guilt in relationships is really a distance regulator. If you get too far apart, you're going to have guilt. And the guilt drives you closer together. And early in your relationship, it did that. When you would drift apart a little bit, the guilt would bring you back together. But when you started blaming the guilt on each other, that's when it became a wedge and you got further and further apart. So it's blame, denial, and avoidance. The emotion itself is self-correcting if you don't blame it on anyone.
Mm-hmm. So your program then, go ahead and do a shameless plug. Your program does something different.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, it builds core values so you can act on your values rather than your feelings. Now, because these blame, denial, and avoidance, you've been doing them since you're 2 years old, it takes a lot of practice. It's about 6 weeks of practicing a skill before it becomes automatic. That's the bad news. The trench habits take a lot of practice. The good news is a lot of practice changes them. You actually have to retrain your autopilot brain. And it's repetition that does that. But the reward is you like yourself better.
Nice.
And that's pretty... Remember that old commercial where the guy would leer into the camera and says, you're going to like the way you feel if you buy this suit? Well, that's how it is with core value. Now, biologically, anger requires adrenaline and cortisol. Those wear out the linings of your organs. They make you feel more powerful, but not more valuable. Yeah, and they're likely to violate your values with it.
Yep.
Whereas valuing behavior, compassion, kindness, interest, trust, those give endorphins and they make you feel more valuable. You like yourself better with endorphins. So you have to try to replace adrenaline with endorphins.
I have been there when I hated myself according to how I was treating my partner, right? Or just the opposite, feeling better, like, huh, feel a little bit better. When I act more loving, maybe even if I don't in the moment, if I don't feel it.
You were self-aware enough to know that you were hating yourself when you're mean to your partner. Mm-hmm. Most of our clients don't know that. So they can, the more they hate themselves, the more they blame it on their partners, and it gets a downward spiral.
Mm-hmm. I don't like how you're making me feel about me, right?
Right.
Yeah.
When we fall in love with people who make us feel better about ourselves.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when that's when we start to get resentful.
Isn't that the purpose of affairs, right? That third party makes me feel good about me. It's not so much the partner is magical. It's what they do for me.
I call it the miracle of love. When you're falling in love, you never realize how compassionate, kind, understanding, thoughtful, and considerate you could be. So it just gives you this real positive mirror. But after you start living together, then you didn't realize how selfish, petty you can be. So the mirror is starting to reflect the whole self, not just that idealized self. But that's good because that's how we grow. All right, I can regulate the selfishness by being more compassionate. And then you become an adult, you know, stay in that toddler brain. Marriage makes you an adult, or if you stay toddler brain, it causes divorce.
Yeah. That is so true. It's an opportunity to grow up. That is very true. I've always believed that.
Hey, we'll be right back after a message from our sponsors. Welcome back to the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. Yeah, and so Dr. Sestazi, man, I'm just... My brain is just spinning, just trying to absorb everything that we've talked about. You have your newer book, actually, Empowered Love. Is that what gets in a little bit more about the kind of the anger and the resentment and those types of feelings? Give us a little synopsis.
It does indirectly. It's mostly about toddler brain love versus adult brain love.
Okay.
We fall in love in the toddler brain, but we have to stay in love. We got to get into the adult brain. Because the adult brain is about values. It's able to see other perspectives. The toddler brain can't. It's self-obsessed. Mm-hmm. It splits. You know, you're either all good or all bad. You make me feel good. You're on a pedestal. You make me feel bad. You're a demon. Mm-hmm. Now, toddlers can get away with that because they're so cute. But when you're over five and not cute anymore, the world's not going to meet your it's not going to meet your entitlement demands. No. So it's really about switching into the adult brain when you have to. Be in the toddler brain to have fun, but when there's a problem or stress, you got to get into the adult brain. Toddler brain's going to make it worse.
Okay.
And relationships have to be in the adult brain. feeling love mm-hmm. can be in the toddler brain. Mm-hmm. See, in a loving relationship, we don't feel love that often. Mm-hmm. You don't have to because mm-hmm. you are connected. It's when the connection's threatened that you feel love.
Mm-hmm. Say that again now. We start to feel love only when
the connection's threatened. Then you say, this person means so much to me. But when it's not here's a way to think of it. You know, John Bowlby developed attachment theory, originally called it a secure base theory. It's the publishers who changed the name of it. And what he meant by that is attachment is a secure base. You feel secure, accepted for who you are in your love relationship. Then you go out in the world crafts all over you, and you come back and recharge your batteries. And your house works like that. Your home is your secure base. When you're not in your home, you never really think about it because you know it's going to be there when you get there, when you get home.
Yeah.
The only time you think about it is if it needs repair. If the plumbing's wrong or if the roof's leaking, then you can't get it out of your mind because the secure base has become insecure. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with love relationships. That's why we develop these ceremonies like Valentine's Day so you mm-hmm. can feel love on that day and anniversaries and birthdays. It gives you permission through mm-hmm. ritual to feel love. But most of the time we don't.
Yeah. To reevaluate. Most of the time, we just take it for granted, right? That the home is there and the partner is there. And it's all
Yeah,
well.
But that's not a bad thing. That it's good that you feel secure in the love.
Yeah.
See, we think of taking for granted as bad. Taking advantage of someone is bad. But taking for granted means that it's a secure relationship.
All is well. Yeah. Very good.
It's true. I think sometimes when appreciate my wife a lot more when she's maybe threatened or she's sick or I'm away mm-hmm. speaking or something. And then I have this fondness, this admiration for her when I'm away. And looking forward to reuniting, being back to that secure base.
Yeah. She's more in your mind when you're away from her than when you're with her.
It's so true.
See, when you're with someone, your brain's going more on autopilot.
Yeah.
When you're living with someone. So you're not consciously perceiving them as much. But when they're not with you, then you have to consciously recall them and they enter your consciousness more.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Stosny, we've had an amazing discussion. So many insights. We're going to put your books on our show notes. Tell us a little bit more, though, where people can find you, but more about the boot camps and the classes. Do you have a website or a social media?
Yeah, the website is compassionpower.com. The boot camps are for chronic resentment and emotional abuse. We have other relationship workshops that are not for those things. But once resentment becomes part of your defensive system, just change in your partner's behavior won't change the resentment. It'll just latch onto something else. So it really needs to recondition your defensive system, and that takes pretty intensive. So the boot camps are 4 2.5-hour streaming sessions, and for each one, there's about 10 pre-recorded webinars that you have to go over and fill out the exercises, and then we go over the exercises in this session. Now, the other ones don't require as intensive work. Mm-hmm. But because relationships function primarily in the autopilot brain by habit, to really get change, you got to recondition the autopilot brain. Insight doesn't change behavior when you lapse into habit. And under stress, all animals, including humans, retreat to previously learned habits. So what you learn in marriage counseling can be very insightful, but when you get triggered at home, you know I'm quoted the most on saying in the press is, how will Mr. Hyde remember what Dr. Jekyll learned in therapy?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Not easy.
It's a different domain of your brain.
Just before we let you go, we have to ask you about emotional abuse. Please, what are some of those subtle signs that someone is being emotionally abused? What does it look like, feel like, sound like?
Emotional abuse is when you deliberately try to make someone feel afraid or bad about themselves so they will do what you want. Now, we do those mm-hmm. things inadvertently a lot, but abuse is yeah. when you do it purposely. Now, I don't like to give the emotional abuse behaviors because I don't think that's the right standard for your relationship. I mean, you didn't get married hoping you would never be abused, right? You got married hoping that you would feel valued, loved, and compassionate. Okay. So compassion has to be the standard. See, what couples fight about, especially with emotional abuse, where, you know, when somebody hits you, you have a clearer marker. But with emotional abuse, you're arguing about your intention. Well, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, so feelings shouldn't be hurt. So you argue about the label, and what is lost is the behavior wasn't compassionate. It hurt. That's what you want to focus on. So the judgment of the behavior is whether it's compassionate, not whether it's abusive. And failure of compassion in love feels like abuse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sure does.
It's because of that expectation. You made me fall in love with you by making me believe you would care how I feel.
That's right. So I expect certain behaviors from you. Yeah.
Yeah. You can take it if your boss is on the iPad when you're talking to him, but if your partner does it, it feels very, boss never promised to care how you feel.
Yeah.
That's right. We didn't make those vows together, did we?
Yeah. Well, it's always implicit in the formation of a bond. Like newborn infants won't bond with you if you don't respond to their cries.
Oh.
And they're little bonding machines.
Yeah.
The drive to form emotional bonds is never as strong in your entire life as it is the first 6 months of life. And that's because they have to attach to survive. They can't take care of themselves.
That's right.
So they're a little attachment machines. But if you don't respond to their distress cries, they won't bond with you. Mm-hmm. And they stop crying, even though they're uncomfortable or in pain. They won't cry.
They just learn that helplessness, right? It's hopeless. Yeah. Why bother?
Yeah. Well, it got selected because crying in the wild attracts predators. So if nobody's going to take care of you anyway, it's better to die slowly than to be eaten. So
why bother? I even hear that from adults in their relationships. It's kind of like, why bother trying to talk with them, right?
Yeah.
Why bother going to marriage? I'm just that hopelessness. It just is heartbreaking. Last question we have. Any other tips on for our listeners today about how to have a stronger marriage connection? Anything come to mind?
It's be true to your own deeper values. Mm-hmm. Be compassionate, your own humane values. See, we're hardwired for humane values because we're highly social, and humane values create tight social units. And when you violate them, your own values, you're going to automatically feel guilt, shame, and anxiety. And that's not a bad thing because that prompts you to be true to your values. What countervenes the entire evolutionary purpose of those emotions is blaming them on someone. So if I feel guilty, you know, a benign example that happens to everybody, a really attractive actress or actor comes on TV and you have this little feeling, because you're a sexual animal, a little feeling of attraction. You feel guilty if your partner's sitting right next to you. And that should drive you to reach out and hug them.
Yeah.
But what we tend to do is, he's putting on weight or she's been ignoring me. So we'll blame it on them. And then it creates, blame is what creates the problem. So be true to your values. That's the bottom
line. Fascinating. That's fascinating. Yeah. I'm going to have to really think about that some more.
Yeah, me too. I got to dive more into this.
Dr.
Starling, this has been amazing. Before we wrap up, one of the things we like to do on Stronger Marriage Connection is your takeaway of the day. We've talked about all kinds of stuff. If you had just a single little bit of advice, what's your takeaway you hope listeners will remember?
Well, self-regulation. Your only chance of getting the partner you most want to have is to be the partner you most want to be. Your only way to influence your partner's behavior is to change what your partner is reacting to. See, our brains are hypersensitive to recording the reactions of our partners, but not what they're reacting to. Mm. Like after you have an argument with your partner, you'll remember the worst thing that your partner said or did, but you won't remember what you said or did right before that. Your brain just didn't record it.
Yeah.
That's right. To set our partner off, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Right. Wow. I missed that part. Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway today?
It's just the power of one, the power of an individual for better or for worse, and to really self-regulate. Before I bring up, honey, you're great. You know, you're a great driver. I'm just anxious. I'm going to really make sure that I'm coming at that with a very sincere.
It's got to be authentic, voice. Right? It's got to be authentic.
It's got to be real. Yep.
And if you get to your core value, it will be authentic.
Good. I love it. I'm going to try and hone in on my core values, Dr. Stosny and Dave.
Right. Yeah. And that's my takeaway of the day is our discussion. We talked about the feelings and then the values and just this thought of I need to learn to feel it, but not follow it, and then retrieve really back to who I am, my core values. And I'm a huge fan of compassion. I'm so glad that we've had that discussion about it, because I can't speak highly enough of how important that is. So Dr. Stosny, thank you so much for joining us. We are huge fans of your work. Man, we consider you, again, one of the legends in the field in this area. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Well, it's my pleasure.
Well, that's all for now, my friends. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. We couldn't do this without you. We'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today. Do us a favor and take a few minutes, if you haven't already, to subscribe to our podcast on the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel. Leave a review and share with a friend. You can also follow and message us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. We'd love to hear from you. Tell us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. And don't forget to check out our website, strongermarriage.org, for show notes and more great resources from the Utah Marriage Commission for improving your relationship connection. Finally, a big thanks to Utah State University Extension, Rex Polanis, Kirsten Wilson, and the Utah Marriage Commission for producing each episode.